The Guardian.
Hello, welcome to Music Weekly from guardian.co.uk/music. I'm Rosie Swash, and on this week's show, Paul is in Austin for South by Southwest. We'll be speaking to him, finding out who he's seen and what's happening at the big music conference down in Austin, Texas. We've got reviews of Mystery Jets, Does It Offend You Yeah, and The Breeders in Singles Club, and we'll look at the best bits of the blog and Facebook from the past 7 days. But we start with these blokes. There's a hole in my neighbourhood down which of late I cannot help but fall. There's a hole in my neighbourhood down which of late I cannot help but fall. So you just heard Grounds for Divorce from Elbow. Elbow were formed back in 1990 when lead singer Guy Garvey met guitarist Mark Potter at Sixth Form College. They've released 3 albums in that time and countless EPs, including 2000's critically praised The Newborn EP. Well, Paul's off this week, but before he went, he had a chance to speak to Guy and Pete from the band, and he started by asking them if their new album were a place, where would that place be?
Now then, if it was a place, it'd be a very odd place. It'd be, do you remember the Doozers from Fraggle Rock?
Oh, I certainly do remember
the little
the
guys
Doozers.
With the hard hats. Yeah. Somewhere populated by creatures that resembled them.
Because they basically kept Fraggle Rock ticking over, didn't they? I mean, the Fraggles,
they didn't really contribute
anything substantial
to
the local economy.
They were freeloading hippies, the Fraggles. In that record, that land, the land of the Seldom Seen Kid, the Doozers would be king.
Well, the reason I ask you this question is because part of your well-deserved reputation has been for kind of being able to evoke lyrically your locale, you know, Manchester and environs. But it strikes me that particularly lyrically, there's a lot of stuff in this album which is quite fantastical and imaginary. And there's like the song like The Fix, which is almost like a complete poetic fiction.
Yeah.
And also the musical influences. You've got that style of music that sounds like it could fit in the Third Man soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
How much of an expansion has that been for you?
There's been more of a sense of geography in the other records. I mean, with Leaders of the Free World particularly, we made a decision to make it in one room that we wanted you to be able to hear on every song, whereas this one was made in a little back room. So I suppose it's a lot more of a little backroom conspiracy of a record. It was the five of us, no producer, Craig was the producer, and a very well-guarded secret, a very well-kept secret. Well, during the making of the record, we had quite a lot of trouble, label trouble, in terms of the good ship V2 was sinking, we wanted to get off, and Fiction Records wanted to take us on. But we wouldn't let Fiction hear anything until the deal was done.
As a band, how melancholy are you all?
Well, not at all, really. We've both got the same childish sense of humour that we've always had. I suppose our tastes musically join at that point with a lot of music. We're all big softies. I think a lot of it, to be honest with you, and I've never really thought this through, especially whether or not I should say it in an interview, is down to the amount of weed that we smoked when we were growing up. We smoked an awful lot of weed, didn't we?
I didn't.
Yeah, he did.
The least convincing denial ever.
He still does. We haven't had a drug scandal in the band yet.
About time.
I don't think smoking a joint puts you good, really, is it? I need to go heavier, I need to go further.
If we've seen Winehouse recently, we realise the stakes have been raised a little bit.
A little bit, jeez.
God bless her.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Do you know what? Somebody should do an article about how hard that girl has worked over the last few years. It's ridiculous how many gigs she's done. She's an absolute trooper. You know, your record company, you're a commodity to them beyond a certain point, and they'll keep you going until you say, actually, no, I'm not doing that. But, I mean, if you've been hungry for something your whole life and you know that it's a career you're privileged to have and it's not going to last forever as well, that's the other thing that niggles you. When do you say stop? When do you say that's enough, you know? Mm-hmm. Because I don't know how she feels about that kind of thing, but I couldn't live with the regret of throwing my career towel in myself, you know? Yeah, I have to tour till I get ill before I'll say stop.
I want to ask about this because it's just consistent in almost everything you read about you. Is this real sympathy that loads of people have with you who love your music and feel that you should have sold more records? Do you have this kind of deep-seated desire to kind of crack the big time, or are you content?
All we wanted to do was make music that we really loved and we're very proud of. And, of course, that changes when you have to provide for a family. You want, if possible, to get some stability for your family, and it's not the most stable game, mm-hmm. you know. So, of course, there's more of a temptation to commercialise your music. I mean, I actually think that had we not had bad luck in terms of business, if we'd have stayed at one label for more than one album, for instance,
yeah.
you know, yeah, we've just been unlucky in terms of we joined the industry at a time when it began to shift. Sleep in the Back was written specifically with being a millennium hangover in mind. We knew that there was a big nothing going to happen, you know, the scare stories about the millennium bug. And we made an album, we hoped, full of comfort and reassurance and romance. And it didn't come out for 18 months after that. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, bands appeared in the same musical spectrum as us, you know, like Coldplay. Yeah, then that was a little irritating, tailing bands that we weren't tailing, you know. But I can't say that we're all clenching and unclenching our fists with frustration.
Stockport Supporters Club kindly supplied us a choir. Your vow was your smile as we moved down the aisle on the last boat home. And this is where I'll go.
I'd like to shift tack slightly and maybe get a little bit political. You were the first Western band to go on a tour of Cuba. Mm. How did you feel when you heard about Fidel stepping down?
The Cuba experience for me was a double-edged sword. That's not the right phrase at all. On the one hand, it's a beautiful country. There's lower levels of poverty in Manchester than there is in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there was a secret police culture there that scared the pants off me, particularly because we were over there with the British consul promoting tourism in Cuba. So we were on British diplomatic visas. We were tailed everywhere we went. And another diplomat from another country, actually, told me about two or three people that he knew, a journalist in particular that was a good friend of his, that was just disappeared in the middle of the night because he spoke out against El Presidente. So on the one hand, you've got this socialism in action that's preventing the very lowest levels of poverty that you could expect in this country. On the other hand, you've got this massive, terrifying corruption where you can't move between states. And for it to present itself as a country that's free is ridiculous. They need to get rid of that dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. How do you read the political situation in the UK at the minute? Are you still as disenchanted as you were with Tony a few years ago?
I'm just incredibly frustrated. Part of me thinks, you know, that Gordon Brown got into politics for all the right reasons, and I just wish his younger self could talk to him now. Whereas he's not Tony Blair. He signed the cheque on that war, and I haven't forgotten that, you know. That was the biggest public demonstration this country's ever seen, and it wasn't a home issue. It was about something happening on the other side of the world, and it was ignored. So the bunch of them can go to hell, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. Very, very disenchanted with the whole lot of them.
One place that has benefited or has risen in kind of line with the tenure of the Labour government has been Manchester. It's a really vibrant place, a place that's been rebuilt. What's the mood like kind of musically, culturally?
No, I think Manchester sort of does its own business. You know, its musical heritage perpetuates itself. We got support from that, the sort of the generation above us, really, didn't we?
Yeah, you get a leg up, don't you? People help each other. There's a community. There's a definite community within sort of musicians and stuff. It's
Mm. Yeah. I remember Manny shaking hands with you very publicly.
Yeah, no, he was bowing to me.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus, this is the chap from the Stone Roses. Do you know what I mean? Andy Rourke's always about, and he's a lovely chap.
Yeah.
And then they're chatting to me, thinking, Jesus, you're in the Smiths. But there's no sort of hierarchy
with the passing of Tony Wilson last year, there's almost that role of somebody who is the chief cheerleader, the torch holder for Manchester, has gone. Mm. Is there any inclination on anybody's part to step into those shoes? Or
I don't think anybody would.
I don't think anyone could, no.
I remember Tony going to a party at Atlas Bar on the end of Dean's Gate in Manchester that was for Twisted Nerve. Badly Drawn just released his first record. Mm-hmm. I played this terrible gig. Do you remember it? It was just me.
Oh, right. Ooh.
Yeah, just me and the guitar. There's only two songs I can play on me at, and not very well at that. Yeah, and nobody was listening. It was a real industry crowd. They were just sort of chunnering on. I actually saw some guy at the bar, see a fella walking in, put his pint down, open his arms, and as they met, they both went, B Sky B and hugged each other. You know what I mean?
Are you sure that's not some Nathan Barley ironic greeting?
No, that's exactly what was going on. I remember in the middle of all this throng, I started, because they weren't listening, I started singing Wankers. Nobody noticed because no one was listening to me. And then I saw Wilson come in, and for some reason it popped into my head when I was at his funeral in Manchester, because it said an awful lot. He swept in and he knew that most of the people in that room were going, twat, you know. And then he very ceremoniously went over to where Andy Votel was DJing and bowed very deeply and shook his hand. And it was almost like a very official passing of the baton to Andy Votel, because Twisted Nerve were making such a noise at that point. We'd have cut our legs off to be on that label at that point, you know. But we weren't quite cool enough for them.
Oh, well, they're cool enough for us. That was Guy Garvey and Pete Turner from Elbow. The album The Seldom Seen Kid is out on Monday 17th and Grounds for Divorce is out now. OK, now on Music Weekly, it's time for Singles Club, where, as you know, we invite the cream of the Guardian's music critics to join us to review some singles. This week we've got The Guide's Will Dean and Guardian.co.uk cultural editor Alex Needham.
Hello.
It's like Minister of Culture.
Yeah.
Hello, Will.
Hello, Rosie.
OK, we're going to start with Mystery Jets, and this is Young Love.
Young love never seems to last. Heart are young until they have a past. One night of love, nothing more, nothing less. One night of love that left my heart in a mess.
If I only knew your name, I'd go from door to door, searching all the crowded seats with the face that I once saw.
Okay, that's Mystery Jets with Young Love. The Mystery Jets hail from Eel Pie Island, which is situated in the River Thames in Twickenham and is famous for its musical legacy. Pete Townsend's got a recording studio there, you know. The band are fronted by Blaine Harrison and unique, we think, in indie pop circles for having Blaine's dad, Henry, on guitar. They made their debut back in 2005 with their well-received Making Dens. The Harrisons and gang are now onto their second album, 21, which is out later this month. Will, what do we think of this?
I quite liked it, actually. I mean, it's very sweet for a song which is essentially about having a one-night stand and losing a girl's phone number. There's a bit in there where one of the guys sings, "I've written my number on your hand, but it came off in the rain," to which I would suggest putting it in your mobile next time. We've all got one. But no, I thought it was lovely, and Laura Marling is very talented for an 18-year-old, depressingly so. Makes me feel quite old that she's... So good, really.
Yeah, I should probably say Laura Marling, who features on that track, isn't actually in the Mystery Jets. They're just like friends and stuff like that. But yes, she sounds really nice. And it was the point where she came into the track in the second verse where I thought, oh, I really like this, because it's her voice, her vocals work so well with the kind of sweet melody. Alex, what did you think?
I liked it, but I think I preferred that early stuff, to use that great music journalist cliche.
There was so much better in 2005.
Well, I once visited them actually on Eel Pie Island, which is a pretty magical place. There are no cars on there. It's just a strange sort of artist's enclave, and it is right in the middle of the river. But to me, it seems like there's less Eel Pie Island and more Shoreditch in the Mystery Jets' new direction. I think it's good and it works, but it just doesn't have the slightly magical quality about their previous stuff. All the kind of prog rock elements they used to have aren't really present in this song, but maybe they're going for a hit, which is fair enough.
Do you think that they're going for a sort of poppy direction on purpose?
I think so. I mean, they were a bit neglected probably first time round. And the fact that their dad was in the band, I think they thought it was great that he was in the band, but everybody else sort of took the mickey a bit. Oh. But now that the dad's gone, I wonder whether the weirdness has gone as well.
Although I saw them live on the first album tour, and he introduced a Syd Barrett cover by saying, "Yeah, this is a song by someone called Syd Barrett. Do you know who he is?"
Thanks, Dad.
Okay, that was Young Love by Mystery Jets, and it's out now. The second track on Singles Club is We Are Rock Stars by Does It Offend You? Yeah. Does It Offend You? Yeah, with We Are Rock Stars. The band are a four-piece electro-rock group from Reading whose influences range from 80s pop to Rage Against the Machine. Their name, voted worst band name of 2007 by the website formerly known as Guardian Unlimited, apparently, was recently revealed to have been inspired by a line in The Office where David Brent says, "Does it offend you, yeah, my drinking?" The boys from D.I.O.Y.Y. are prolific remixers, having worked on everyone from the White Stripes to Block Party. They're also known for their enthusiastic live shows. Alex.
The name makes me laugh.
I really like the name. Everyone's like, "Oh, God, it's so awful." But I think I think it's great.
It sort of goes out to be annoying, doesn't it? And they've got a really nasty-looking logo. The music's kind of the same, particularly that song. In a way, I don't see what's all that groundbreaking about it. I mean, older listeners will probably remember bands like Pop Will Eat Itself back in the late 80s would do kind of noisy sort of dance records, but that no person who was really into dance music would like, this kind of strange sort of annoying, slightly nasty hybrid. I think they're there to get up people's noses, and they probably succeed admirably.
Because I interviewed the bassist in the band, and he was really nice. And there was a lot of what they were saying that made me think of The Prodigy, in that they all of them have their own thing going on and could just as easily be in other bands. You know, there's no sort of one creative person in that band. They all bring something to it, and they're so enthusiastic, and you can kind of imagine them doing something totally different on their next album. I'm not necessarily saying it would be excellent.
It's interesting that one of them is the son of Martin Rushent, who produced Dare by the Human League, so they've obviously come from like a lineage of electronic music pioneers.
You can't say that about many people.
Exactly. So they might be a bit more knowing than they make out, I wonder.
Ooh. Will?
I quite like it. I don't think you can go too wrong with a vocoder and sounding a little bit like French house bands with some loud guitars. The last single really reminded me of The Rapture, not so much this one. We've had it on in the guide office a few times, and there was a few of us who quite liked it. No one loved it, and I think it's the same for this song.
So, doesn't offend you, but it doesn't not offend you. Does it sit on the fence? Yeah. Okay, that is We Are Rock Stars by Does It Offend You? Yeah, and it's out now. The final track on Singles Club is We're Gonna Rise by The Breeders. That's The Breeders with We're Gonna Rise. The Breeders are headed up by ex-Pixies bassist Kim Deal and her sister Kelly. They've been going for nearly 20 years now, but their forthcoming album, Mountain Battles, will only be their fourth. The Deal sisters have put their sporadic output down to various issues with sobriety and family commitments. Mountain Battles was produced by a longtime Pixies producer, Steve Albini, who's also worked with PJ Harvey, Nirvana and The Stooges. I'm going to go first because I love The Breeders. and I love Kim Deal, and I think this is a fantastic album, but I don't think that that track is a standout one in any way, and I think it's very slow compared and actually quite sort of unemotional compared to most of them on there. Will, what do you think?
Excuse the pun, but The Breeders never been a massive deal to me. They're a band that I've been meaning to go back and acquaint myself with, but I never quite had the chance. And I've listened to the track about 10 times today and couldn't find anything particularly interesting about it. I mean, it's very nice, it's pleasant. I'm surprised that it's the single. The one thing it reminded me of was Ghost Is Born era Wilco. It was kind of quite backgroundy, but not necessarily in a bad way. It was very nice, but I wasn't that bothered.
Fair enough. Alex?
It didn't do that much for me either, and obviously she's a real icon and, you know, an incredibly inspiring character. She's been on a lot of great records. It's almost that both the Deal sisters have decided, you know, it's almost like they're doing the opposite thing to what they should do, which is quite an American indie, you know, alternative attitude. They've still obviously got that kind of awkwardness that's served them. But yeah, by doing something that isn't like the big Cannonball style anthem, it does feel a bit so what to me. But maybe, as you say, if the album's good, then you know, maybe it'll work in the context of that.
Okay, the album Mountain Battles is very good, but we're all giving that a little bit of a thumbs down. That's We're Gonna Rise by The Breeders, and it's out now. And I should say before we move on that I interviewed Kim Deal a while back, and we're going to hear that on the podcast in a few weeks, and I don't know what the finished edit sounds like, but it was a pretty remarkable experience to interview her, so I'd give it a listen. All right, last week we asked you for your thoughts on singles by Be Your Own Pet, MGMT and Hercules and Love Affair. Professor Wito posted, MGMT is gold. This has to be a hit with those in their salad days. Unfortunately, the only people I know who've got this record are old romantics. And Martin Cooling wrote, can't say I'm even a slight fan of Anthony Hegarty, so that put me off the Hercules and Love Affair track straight away. Although after having a good listen to the track, it's a strange situation. Anthony makes and ruins the track all at the same time. It's boring without his vocals, but man, does his voice grate through me. So we want your reviews of this week's tracks, Mystery Jets, Does It Offend You? Yeah, and The Breeders on our blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Tell us what you think of those and these tracks that are also out to buy this week. The hunter kill, the sky will crack, the earth might split. I feel a dread in my stomach pit. Okay, thanks to Will Dean and Alex Needham for coming in to join us for Singles Club today.
Thanks very much.
Having us.
And Singles Club this week is now over, I'm afraid, but you can catch the column that I put together each week at guardian.co.uk/music. Well, it can't have escaped your notice that Paul is not here this week. He is, in fact, at the annual South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas. Before we hear a little bit from him, here's a little taster of past sounds of South by Southwest.
I've been throughout this town for so long. She's been dancing since the first day. I've been all around, but I love coming back to see Lucy.
Lunch out loud, you never had a day of slow cone. Could have picked you when I relate to the road boat. Caught a blitz, how he spoke to a no-dose. Mutter on the fritz, cause he wouldn't play a role of revenge like a bitch. And express the regrets, though he isn't where the homeowner's pissed. Had a joke, cause he posed by the glitz.
Right, you just heard Aesop Rock, Beirut, Lee Scratch Perry and Jamie T there in no particular order. Well, the man who usually sits in this chair is over there and he's on the line now to tell us what's going on. And Paul, are you having a good time?
I'm all right, Rosie. I have to say, it's been about 12 hours since I last had a nacho. or indeed a taco. I'm getting withdrawal symptoms.
Oh dear. So other than the tacos, are you enjoying South by Southwest?
Well, it's you're phoning me on about 4 o'clock in the morning on the Thursday, so officially it's only been going for about 24 hours, and I have very much enjoyed my first 24 hours. I went to the first live show of the festival at 11:40 in the morning at some place called the Red Eyed Fly, and it was a local Austin band called Los Brazos, which I think means the armed, and they were a bit kind of like, I don't know, the Klaxons mixed with Pavement or something, and they weren't especially good, but they weren't embarrassingly bad either. I got the first freebies of the day then as well, a book about how to become a rock band written by Vice, and I got my first free booze of the day then as well, and it just went better and better. I was fortunate enough to see Van Morrison. He was playing in a phenomenally small place called La Zona Rosa, which fit about 500 people in there, and that was kind of not particularly well publicised, and it was a tea time thing, so there was massive queues for that. And then at the same time, I was getting calls that apparently Lou Reed, who is in town to talk about Berlin, which he's about to take on tour again, was going to perform some spontaneous gig someplace else at exactly the same time. Now, it turned out all Lou Reed did was turn up at the venue, walk off the stage, and immediately sit down in the audience. But, you know, those sorts of rumours that get people going. The rumours and the late-night parties, obviously.
So, well, to give people a bit of an impression, it's not a music festival, is it? It's called a music conference, which does make it sound incredibly boring.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, it is a music festival. It does have this conference bit, which is there is one big conference centre where people like Lou Reed will be talking, or I think there's Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth in conversation with the composer Steve Reich tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
So there's bits, you know, there's bits of that which actually do sound interesting. There you go, you're contradicting yourself. Right?
No, you're contradicting me.
Yes, that's a good point. But actually, to all intents and purposes, while all these gigs are either called showcases or parties, they really are just gigs, and it's got that same kind of feel as a festival in that there'll be a tide of people moving up and down in one particular direction according to where the biggest bands are playing at any one time.
So you mentioned Van Morrison, up-and-coming Van Morrison. Are there any other acts that we should be looking out for 2008?
For 2008? Well, the thing is, Rosie, as you well know, you're fully abreast of the new band scene.
Yes.
And actually what you get over here is, it strikes me that the most of the bands that people are talking about, that people want to see, that are getting the good slots in all the showcases, are your MGMTs, your These New Puritans, your Emmy the Greats, your Yeasayers. Yeasayers must be playing about 25 gigs over the course of the 5 days. They're all over the place. Vampire Weekend have got a slot. The Cool Kids. It's all these bands that have been talked about and have got buzz off of magazines or blogs or even websites.
And is there anyone, you know, because every year it's like really big at South by Southwest, and then you hear about them. Who do you think, who's made an impression on you that you think people are going to be interested in post South by Southwest?
I think it's all about Brooklyn again. There's lots of Brooklyn acts coming and playing. I saw one man electronica act today called Cassettes Do Not Listen. Cassettes cannot listen. Sorry to get away. But he's kind of like a one-man electronic act. He's got a core keyboard and an electric guitar, and kind of sets one up and then goes and plays on the other. He wasn't particularly good, but there's umpteen acts like these from Brooklyn. Tapes and Tapes are coming back again. I'm not sure there's any one particular act that you won't have heard of that's getting a lot of buzz currently. But then it's still quite early days in the festival. I mean, you know, a lot of people are getting very excited about seeing Yeasayer, and a common thread seems to be a tinge of psychedelia.
So after we finish this conversation, you are going to go to bed, but then at some point you're going to get up again and start your day two of South by Southwest. So give us a very brief outline of what that's going to involve.
Well, tomorrow I'm going to try and go to the British music industry is out in force here, and they've got this British Music Embassy, and they have a barbecue tomorrow with bangers and warm ale and performances by Scouting for Girls. So it won't be for the music I'm going, but professionally speaking, I think it might be interesting to check that out. Then I think we might have, you know, I'm a fan of rap music. I think DJ Pete Rock is in town, so I'll probably go and see him. But there's quite a lot of things that go on in the afternoon which are just completely open and free for everybody. And one that I think Vampire Weekend and Bon Iver and Yeezy are all playing at the same venue tomorrow afternoon between like 1:30 and 5. So I'll do that. But the highlight of tomorrow, and in fact the thing I'm most concerned about going to all week, is the Playboy Party at a location currently unknown.
Why, need I ask?
This won't do my feminist credentials any good. Well, basically, the truth is, Justice are playing. Justice are headlining, and they've got an amazing live show. If it's on some kind of crazy ranch or other, it will be amazing. And the sight of 12 former Playgirls walking around in the midst of all that will not entirely
dissuade you.
A complete downer on the whole thing. No. So that's my little mission, to see if I can get into that.
I believe in you, Paul. I think you can do it.
Oh, Rosie, thanks. It really helps when somebody has faith in me, you know.
I'm going to let you go to sleep now.
Oh, thanks very much.
Well, take care.
I will do.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, before we go, here's what you had to say on the blog last week. Most of the talk was of the future heads. Our friend Professor Wito said, I reckon our northeastern compadres are right that the new record has a sunny feel to it. The loose drums and muffled guitars sound like they've been recorded from the falafel stall at a festival. And Marky, our good friend Marky, posted this. It's good to hear that the heads have got their enthusiasm back. The future heads mean so much more to their region than the fact that they're just a local band made good. I took a lot of their cues from the way This Ain't Vegas have helped a lot of people along and accepted the position of figureheads, mentors and supporters of a lot of cultural activity in Newcastle and Sunderland. The interview sits really well with the Estelle one, two really smart musicians that, despite the music industry's best efforts, still love what they do, love learning about other things and, in comparison to many other artists, now retain a lot of control over themselves. Also, Michael Hand sounds like he grew up with Red Dwarf. very astute observations there. And finally, generic blog guy said, Paul Mack, severest apologies for getting your name wrong last week. He sounded genuinely hurt and had a lump in my throat all the way home on the train. I was probably thinking of Benjamino Green. Is he still the producer? He agreed some months ago your theme music is rubbish and promised a replacement at some point. Our current producer is not Benjamino. It's the lovely Scott. And he says he's not Ben Green anymore. It's like a Doctor Who transformation kind of thing. And yes, the theme tune is rubbish. And yes, there's a replacement coming. But you can't wait. Anyway, post comments on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of Elbow and South by Southwest. The address is blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Hello to our new friends on Facebook from the past few weeks: Nora Ryan, James Chambers, Lee Pelletiero, Dean Mason, Robert Holmes, Amma Adjedge, Tom Gibbs, Henry Barnes, Richard Freeman, Cameron Rout, James Kinsella, Chris Dianson, Simon Holland, Tony Poland, Luella Forbes, Matthew Michael Hughes, Joe Payne, Joe Gingell, Nahia Nal Maihameen, Gustavo Miranda, Michael Grant, Paul Bond and Neil Johnson, and Amy Jane Barnes, Eduardo de Fazenda, Christelle Hines, and Kieran Gaynor McCoy. Now, unfortunately, Facebook did that weird thing where it kind of froze, had a little bit of a seizure halfway through. So there was some more friends requests that I didn't get round to sorting out this week. And I promise you, that wasn't because I don't want to accept you. I will get round to it as soon as Facebook behaves. But there was time for me to notice that someone called Michael Swash requested our friendship. Now, as far as I know, he's not a relation of mine, and I will get on to accepting him soon. And if there are any other Swashes out there, back off, it's my name. No, I'm only joking, of course. We love you all. Join us. Poor Paul McInnes was getting all manner of stick for his Wire spoiler last week, so he apologised in true McInnes fashion. Paul McInnes wholeheartedly apologises for all his spoiling of a three-year-old's TV show. In fact, he has been killed. And you know what? We don't miss him. He's right, you know. Next week on the programme, we'll be speaking to the Long Blondes. Well, you just heard the Long Blondes, and the sound of Sheffield's gritty disco will be here with us next week. will be back here next Thursday, and I won't be on the other side of the table because I'm going on holiday on Saturday. You forgot about that, didn't you, Producer Scott? So register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. Find out how at guardian.co.uk/music. That's all for this week. Thanks to Will and Alex for reviewing the singles and to you for listening. Music Weekly will be back next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.